T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally, where author T.C. Hale helps you understand how the human body works and why we're all so jacked up. This is Kenna McEnroe, and I'm not going to make it on this episode because I have a toddler now, and it's pretty rare that I even get to go to the bathroom by myself. So you're going to have to deal with just listening to Tony today. Here he is, T.C. Hale.
Thank you, Kenna, and welcome back to Kick It Naturally. This is episode 235. We are finally back from a much-needed hiatus. I'm sorry it took us so long to get back to getting some new episodes going, but, you know, Big Lots had a sale on linens, and obviously I didn't want to miss that, and that's just how it goes sometimes. But I do seriously appreciate your patience and the outpouring of support that came with Will's passing, and all of your support was truly appreciated. And if you missed all of that, you can go back and listen to episode 192, which will forever be known as the sobbing like a six-year-old girl episode. We also took some time to get Will's website back up online so that you guys can go back up and reference it. So it's ready to go now. It's at mybodyofknowledge.net still. So whenever you guys need to reference something or you just want to go back and check out his work, we can make sure that we make sure his work carries on. And so you guys can go and check up stuff at that website now. And we've also been working on our new podcast, Six Figure Health Pro, which is a podcast that's geared towards health professionals, and it kind of helps them understand marketing and the business aspects of being a health professional. So that's live now. You guys can go and search for it on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search for Six Figure Health Pro. And all of that, plus both me and Kenna both dealing with toddlers. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they kind of changed your schedule. It's just kind of made it a little hectic to get back, but I had an important topic I wanted to cover, and so we're back, and we're going to have new episodes coming now, and today we're going to be talking about tachycardia, and I've heard from some people that have just had their life destroyed from this issue, and you might think that might not be the case, but I'll kind of explain how that happened for these individuals. And we're going to kind of go through understanding what could be the underlying cause for tachycardia or an elevated heart rate. We're going to talk about both those things and what's the difference. But some of this show is going to get a little bit complicated. So if you're dealing with this issue, I made you a free kind of cheat sheet that will just kind of outline everything that we're going over today. So don't feel like you have to take crazy, crazy notes. I kind of put everything in an outline. And you can go to kickitnaturally.com/235 and just download that for free so that you can kind of follow along or come back and reference, okay, what was the steps I need to take? What do I need to look at with my physiology? So it's all lined out in that kind of free cheat sheet. So tachycardia, it's very common. It's just a type of heart rhythm disorder or an arrhythmia where the heart beats faster than normal while at rest. And actual tachycardia is defined as a heart rate over 100 at rest. But like a, you know, Kleenex or something like that, that just has become this common term, a lot of people will just call an elevated heart rate tachycardia even when it's not over 100 beats per minute. And your doctor may even diagnose you with tachycardia when it's not literally over 100 beats per minute. So just understand that there can be some variation there. And you know, the 100 beats per minute situation could just be a magnified version of what we'll kind of cover here today, because we're mostly going to focus on the elevated heart rate issue and having spells of like, oh man, my heart is really racing, that kind of thing. Because if you have a resting heart rate over 100, you would want to consider that a more serious issue. And you might even want to swing by a hospital and just get that checked out to make sure everything's okay, because the things that I talk about in this show, you can always work on later. But a resting heart rate of over 100 can be a serious issue, so don't just look the other way on that one. Also, keep in mind that we're talking about an elevated heart rate at rest. That we're not talking about during exercise. During exercise or some type of super stress situation, your heart rate should be elevated. It should go higher. That's kind of how the body works. So when we're talking about elevated heart rate issues, we're talking about while at rest. Now, while we start to get into looking at actual underlying causes that could possibly be the situation when we're looking at elevated heart rates, I want to reiterate that this can be a serious issue. Now, I'm going to explain some situations where correcting the problem is not that difficult. And maybe this is probably going to be a two-part episode. So in the next episode, we'll get into some case studies that I've heard from where the solutions in some of them were not difficult and happened quite rapidly. But that doesn't mean that's the case for all of these cases. Some scenarios can be very serious. So I want you to take this very seriously if you're experiencing these symptoms. And when they tell you, you know, what causes these, you hear a variety of things. Some of the experts, they say, you know, we don't know what's causing it. A lot of times they'll say that it could be a possible birth defect. And I believe that that could be true. But when the reality is that sometimes they'll take a birth defect in the heart, or one of the valves or something like that, and they'll correct that problem surgically. And when that birth defect is corrected, it doesn't actually fix the problem. There's still an elevated heart rate issue. So when that's the reality, we have to consider, you know, maybe sometimes when there's a problem, they'll go in and look for what the cause is, and they'll see something that's abnormal. They'll see some type of birth defect that, hey, that's not what I see usually when I cut somebody open and start poking around at their guts and organs and things. So if it's different, they'll say that that's a birth defect. But the reality is that maybe it's a birth defect that never would have caused a problem. Maybe they would have lived their whole life without ever knowing they had that quote-unquote birth defect, because maybe we never would have cut them open and started poking around and things. So I think that it's possible for a lot of people to have abnormalities. Abnormalities, is that a word that I use? Yeah, for it's possible to have abnormal situations in an organ or the valves or all the structure that can be created from birth defects. But a lot of times everything just works okay anyway. So I think a birth defect can cause problems. But just because a person has a birth defect doesn't mean that things aren't going to operate correctly. So I think that you have to take that into consideration when you're talking about something as serious as open heart surgery. I definitely think that there are cases where open heart surgery could correct the problem, and I believe they even have situations where they'll put a device in the person, and you're bionic now, and now this device is going to help this heart regulate correctly so that you're not having this arrhythmia and all these other problems. And I think there are cases where that's the case and that's necessary, but I've also heard from people who were literally scheduled for open heart surgery, and they took some of the steps that we're going to talk about in this episode, and they fixed the problem in 3 days with two supplements that they picked up at their local health food store. So you're going to see a wide variety of situations like that. And if we're talking about you, then maybe you want to do a little more investigation to see if something simple can correct a problem, maybe while you're waiting for a serious surgery, or maybe before you decide that you want to do a serious surgery, if it's not an urgent situation and you actually have time to, you know, look at other alternatives. So that's kind of what we want to look at in this episode. And we're going to talk about some other possible causes in part two of this tachycardia series. But in this first one, I really want to look at the most common cause. And this is the cause that I've seen in almost every person that I've heard from that was dealing with either a serious tachycardia issue or symptoms that are just an elevated heart rate. Now, if you've read any of my books or taken any of our courses, you know that we teach about a few specific imbalances in the body. And they're imbalances that are pretty easy to run simple tests on your own physiology at home, just with simple tools you can pick up at a pharmacy or a health food store or online. And none of these imbalances are diagnostic or say, here's what's broken. They just kind of give you a clue or a picture of how your body might be operating and nutritional steps that you might be able to take to improve those imbalances and therefore see improvements to the symptoms that are often caused by those imbalances. The tricky part is that with most symptoms, you know, there are two or three possible underlying causes for every symptom. So you don't want to look at a symptom and say, okay, I must have the imbalance that often goes along with that symptom, because most symptoms can be caused by a few different imbalances or other problems in the body, other malfunctions that can take place. But when we're talking about an elevated heart rate, we often want to talk about an anabolic imbalance. And for those who are, maybe this is the first time you've heard me say words, that I'm going to explain what an anabolic imbalance is so that you can follow along and understand what we're talking about. So basically what happens is, at the cellular state of our body, our body is always in either an anabolic or a catabolic state, or in the process of switching back and forth. You've probably heard the word anabolic before when people talk about anabolic steroids for bodybuilders. And what's happening there is, a bodybuilder is using these anabolic steroids to push their body into an anabolic state most of the time, because in the anabolic state, that's when the body repairs and rebuilds new tissue. So that's something that we want our body to do. It usually happens at night. We're usually in an anabolic state at night. And then during the day, we're in what's called a catabolic state, when the body's kind of breaking down tissues. It's in a state where it's very effective at creating energy so that we can function throughout the day. So you can see that both of these states are appropriate. Both of them are necessary. We want to have both of them. It's not like either of them are a problem. But what can happen is, for a variety of reasons, a person can kind of get stuck in one of these states where their body's not moving back and forth as it should, or maybe it's moving too far into one state and not enough into the other state. And either of these states can cause a problem if a person is stuck there too long or is living too far into that state. So to give you an idea, some of the symptoms that are very common to see in an overly anabolic state are constipation, and this happens because the body is sending too much water to the kidneys and not enough to the bowels, so the bowels can get hard and dry and harder to move, and that's just one possible cause of constipation. In my book, Constipation, Kick It Naturally, we talk about a lot of different causes that can possibly create constipation, but an anabolic imbalance is one of those causes. Another symptom you might see is, the person might have to get up at night to pee, or maybe they pee a lot, very frequently. And that's because, again, the body's sending more water to the kidneys and not enough to the bowels. Another symptom is anxiety. Anxiety can be caused by this imbalance. Hypoglycemic symptoms like mental, emotional, and mood swing type issues can be caused in this anabolic state. And it's not caused by being too anabolic, but it can be caused by that imbalance seems to create some circumstances where insulin is overpowering and can drive too much sugar out of the bloodstream at once. So that can possibly be an issue, is hypoglycemic type symptoms when someone's dealing with an anabolic imbalance. Now, it's important to understand that not everybody dealing with those symptoms necessarily has an anabolic imbalance, because those symptoms can be caused by other issues. And you don't have to be experiencing all or any of those symptoms to be experiencing an anabolic imbalance. They're just common to see, so I like people to understand those. But when we really want to figure out, does an imbalance exist or not, we really want to look at the physiology. We really want to look at the numbers of the self-test that a person runs to see how the body's operating, and that in conjunction with the symptoms can then tell us, oh, this person might be dealing with this imbalance. It's worth taking steps to see if we can improve that. You just don't want to look at the symptoms alone and say, oh yeah, I'm anabolic because I pee all the time. Don't do it that way. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about how to look at your unique physiology.
If you're a health professional, or you want to start a career as a health professional, be sure to catch Tony's new marketing podcast for health professionals. Search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. For all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, so you can check out their service. Mm-hmm. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link.
Okay, so if we want to figure out if are we leaning too anabolic or not, is that an issue, and maybe is that the underlying cause for our elevated heart rate, we want to run some simple tests on our body chemistry. And I'm going to kind of walk you through how to do this. But if any of it sounds too complicated, or what did he say, just go to kickitnaturally.com and sign up for our 4-week digestion course. It's 50 cents. It's basically a free course, but the system charges you 50 cents to keep out all the spam registration. So it's going to cost you an entire 50 cents. So that'll kind of walk you through with videos and show you how to run all the tests and how to look at the numbers and how to analyze what's going on. And it makes it very easy to do. But here, I'm just going to show you a few tests and you can do some of them maybe even at home if you have this stuff now. If not, you can pick it up at a pharmacy or maybe a health food store and just kind of look at these numbers. And the first one we want to talk about, the first measurement that is important when we're looking at am I too anabolic or not, is guess what? It's your heart rate. So heart rate being elevated is so common in an anabolic imbalance that we actually use it as a marker for an anabolic imbalance. Now, it doesn't mean, oh, I have an anabolic imbalance. Remember, none of these tests are diagnostic or confirming. You're just kind of looking at if this number is in this range, that's an indication that you could be leaning too far in that anabolic direction. And if you get a whole bunch of them and most of the numbers that you're looking at are leaning in that direction, then that can be like, okay, that's probably what's going on, and why don't I take some steps to improve that imbalance, and we'll see how my body reacts and if the symptoms improve, etc. So when you're looking at your pulse, and you can learn how to do these tests in that course, but also all of my books teach how to run these tests, and that freebie that I gave you kind of gives you a couple little notes on how to do each test too. So when we're looking at pulse, a lot of people just use an automatic blood pressure cuff because that blood pressure cuffs that you can pick up at a pharmacy for $35, $40, we'll give you three numbers in most cases. It'll be the top number, which is your systolic blood pressure, the middle number, which is your diastolic blood pressure, and then that number on the bottom will be your pulse. So basically, with any of these tests that we're going to talk about in the show today, you want to do them at least 2 hours after a meal, but not right when you wake up. You don't want to be fasting. So the only test that I like to see people do fasting is their fasting blood sugar test with a glucometer. So all these other tests, you want to do at least 2 hours after a meal. You don't want your body to be like digesting and going to war against all this food while you're doing these tests. You want it to be at rest and calm and everything is okie dokie. So try, it doesn't have to be exactly 2 hours, but try to make it at least 2 hours after you eat a meal. And for a pulse, you could either use a blood pressure cuff where you just lie down or even just sit down and just relax for a minute and then just push the button to start your blood pressure reading, and then it'll give you your pulse at the end. Or you can just find your pulse on your wrist or on your neck. And if you can't find a pulse, you don't even have to do the test because you died. So it's no big deal. It doesn't matter if you're anabolic or not. But you're probably really catabolic if you're dead because your body will be breaking down. But just find your pulse, and you can just get the stopwatch on your phone and set it for a minute and just count how many beats you get, and that'll tell you what your pulse or your heart rate is, you're looking for the number in a minute. So how many beats do you get in a minute, and that will be your heart rate. So when we teach people to run tests, we consider anything over 77 at a resting heart rate to be an anabolic marker. But let's just be broad, and let's just say anything over 80. Anything over 80, you can consider that a little bit high, and you can consider that as one marker for a possible anabolic imbalance. So we're going to look at other things. And if that's the only marker you have, maybe you either don't have an anabolic imbalance and maybe something else is causing your heart rate to be elevated. And we'll get to other causes in part two of this episode. Or maybe your anabolic imbalance is not very significant. And maybe you just caught yourself at a good time where you're not very anabolic, and maybe there's certain things that you're doing in your life that are pushing you more anabolic at some times, and it's those times when you're pushed severely anabolic that your heart rate is going elevated. So those are some considerations to take when you're looking at these numbers. So in that almost free digestion course or in any of my books, we actually give you like this imbalance guide that you can print off and kind of fill in the numbers when you do these tests so that you can check off numbers and see how many of them are indicating that you might be leaning towards one imbalance or another. So that can make this a lot easier. But let's just look at the next test that we want to talk about. So for the next one, just start peeing on some stuff and see what happens. Okay, I'm going to clarify that just a little bit. I want you to pee on urine pH test strips, not just anything. So you can pick up these test strips. Usually health food stores sell these, or Amazon sells them a lot. Natural Reference sells them. They're harder to find at pharmacies, though some of them will sell them. But you can usually find strips, and you can test your urine or your saliva with these strips. And I'll talk about some more advanced testing strips for urine in just a minute. But with these pH strips, at least 2 hours after a meal, you just run the strip through your urine stream while you're peeing. Or you could pee in a cup and just dip it in there. It's up to you. You know, what's nice is if you pee in a clear cup, you can also look at your urine. And that can give you some indication of what's going on. If you see a lot of debris floating around in your urine, that means that your body is peeing out a lot of cellular debris, and it's breaking down at the cellular level a lot, and you may be leaning to catabolic. But if your water is clear, like if it's just like a little hint of yellow and it looks like you could bottle it and sell it as filtered water because there's hardly anything in it, that's usually an indication of an anabolic imbalance as well. So that can be another marker for you, is if your pee is pretty clear and maybe just hardly yellow at all. But then let's get into testing the pHs. So you would test your urine pH and your saliva pH. And what you're looking for is, are those two numbers, your urine and saliva, are they close together or are they far apart from each other on the chart? So for example, a saliva pH of 7.0 and a urine pH of 5.5, those would be far apart from each other. But if you had a urine pH of, say, 6.5 and a saliva pH of 6.6, those are close together. So when we see those two pHs close together, that can be an indication for an anabolic imbalance. So that's another test that you can look at and see, okay, do I have more than just one marker that shows that I might be leaning to anabolic? And the final test that I want to talk about is a little more fancy. You can get these 10 or 11 parameter urinalysis testing strips on Amazon. That's usually the only place that you can get them. And you'll just search for 10 parameter urinalysis strips, and you'll find them. And one of the markers that you really want to make sure is on the strip before you buy them is specific gravity. That's one you want to see. So if you do these tests and you pee in a cup and you dip that stick in there and you match the numbers, if the specific gravity is lower than 1.011, or sometimes I just call it 11, if it's lower than that, then that can be an anabolic marker as well. So when you look at all those tests, you can kind of see, okay, how many of them could be considered as an anabolic marker? And if it's just one, then maybe it's not a problem. Maybe you're balanced in that area, or maybe it's just a slight imbalance. But if you have three or four things that are saying, hey, look, you're looking a little anabolic, then that can be almost a confirmation that, okay, I need to investigate this a little further. I need to see if taking some steps to improve this will help. So if you look at those numbers and combine them with some of the symptoms that we talked about earlier, like a hard stool or constipation issues, or maybe you pee a lot at night, if you combine that with the symptoms, remember the symptoms alone are not enough to say I have an imbalance, but when you look at that with some numbers, the symptoms can kind of confirm what you're looking at with the numbers and say, okay, other things are happening from this imbalance, so it probably is an issue. So before we talk about steps you could take to improve a possible anabolic imbalance, let's take another break, but let's have this just be a musical break. Okay, that's good enough. Okay, so if you have looked at these numbers and these symptoms and you decided, okay, I might have an anabolic imbalance here, what are some steps I can take to improve that imbalance? So the first thing that I would suggest is look at the level of carbs and sugars that you're eating, because that's the most common cause for someone dealing with an anabolic imbalance. It seems that in a lot of cases, if someone's digestion is not working correctly and they can't break down proteins and fats and emulsify those fats and break down the proteins, that a person will kind of start gravitating towards carbs and sugars because those are easier to break down. They can easily pull fuel out of those, and they feel better when they eat those. So they'll kind of start gravitating towards eating more carbs and sugars. So if that's you, you'll likely need to take some steps to fix digestion so that you can pull fuel out of proteins and fats, and that will allow you to reduce your carbs and sugars. So we have other podcast episodes where we talk about like things like cravings and stuff like that. So if that's a problem for you, you have to fix that. Or when you try to reduce this, you're going to fail. If you just eat chicken and broccoli all day, you're likely going to snap and find yourself elbow deep in a bucket of chubby hubby ice cream. So that's not what we want to do. We want to fix the actual problem so that allows you to reduce the carbs and sugars that you're eating. But carbs and sugars can have a strong pro-anabolic effect on a lot of people. It's very common, so that's usually a really big step. Some other foods that also can be pro-anabolic are things like butter and heavy cream. Eggs where the yolk is cooked soft, like a soft-boiled egg, or over easy where the egg is still runny. Those are very pro-anabolic. And what you could also do beyond just making those changes with food is maybe you could add some supplements that would help help the body move out of that extreme anabolic state and maybe move more towards the catabolic state, especially early in the day. So the most effective pro-catabolic supplements appear to be things like magnesium. B12 can also be very pro-catabolic, and so can vitamin A. So if you're going to include any of those things, those are best taken in the morning or early in the day, like with breakfast and maybe lunch. With magnesium, you want to take that with food because minerals need food and digestion going on to be able to assimilate them. Vitamins you can kind of take whenever you want. So those are a few that can be helpful. But also look at, am I taking something that's pushing me too anabolic? And maybe I don't know. Maybe you're taking something like vitamin E or glutamine, which is this amino acid that a lot of people use to build muscle or to repair and let the body heal better. Another one is potassium. So if you're using any of those things, a lot of those things can very aggressively push the body more anabolic, and maybe you don't need to change a lot of what you're eating. You just need to look at, why am I taking this? And if it's pushing me the wrong way, maybe I should reduce or stop taking that. So in all of our books and courses, we kind of give you food lists and kind of let you look at the imbalances that you might be dealing with and foods and supplements that may be beneficial and things that you might want to avoid. So, but this list, this short list here, are the ones that seem to be the most aggressive in those directions and a good place for you to start. So when you start to take some steps to improve an anabolic imbalance, not only just don't just watch your pulse, although that is important to kind of check in with that and see what's going on. If you become a member on ourcoalition.org, which is the Coalition for Health Education, it's a private organization that we use to kind of educate our clients. But you can sign up as just like a book reader or a self-help kind of member. And there's charts in there where you can input the numbers from your self-test so you can kind of see a visual of the charts of, am I moving in the right direction or not? Because you want to not just pay attention to your symptoms. You want to look at your numbers, because a lot of times the numbers will show changes and they'll show that you're moving in the right direction before the symptoms would improve. And a lot of people will be like, it's been 3 weeks, I don't feel better, I'm not doing it anymore. But if they would have looked at their numbers, they may have seen that they were actually moving in the right direction and were probably very close to having those symptoms improve. So be sure to watch your numbers to make sure that you're moving in the right direction. And if you're not, then maybe you need to take more steps or more aggressive steps to improve that imbalance for you. Maybe the imbalance is just more severe in your situation. So again, this anabolic imbalance issue is not the only cause for an elevated heart rate. It just seems to be the most common. So I like to see people rule it out. You know, rule it out first. So see if that's the case for you. And if it is, then, you know, you just got to do some work to improve it. And if you don't look like you're leaning too anabolic, then we'll talk about some other issues that are possibilities for next week. So remember to get that free cheat sheet. You can just go to kickitnaturally.com/235. And you can download that. It'll kind of walk you through some of these things, and as well as like a sneak peek for what I'm going to be talking about next week too. So next week, we're going to be talking about other causes for an elevated heart rate. We're going to be talking about some oxygen delivery issues. We'll talk about why your heart rate might go higher after you eat a meal. A lot of people say, what's going on? So we'll explain why that happens. And we'll talk about some real life cases and examples so you can kind of see how this works in real life. And maybe we'll talk about backgammon. I almost never talk about backgammon, so we'll see how that goes. But we'll see you next week.
That's it for our show. Don't cry. If you want to read Tony's book for free, go to kickitnaturally.com/book. If you want us to cover a question on an upcoming show, go to kickitnaturally.com and click on Ask Tony. I know there's got to be a joke there. We'll see you next time on Kick It Naturally.
Pop that up, put it with it. Skibbly doobly doobly.